Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. But just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
That's right, we're going to wake up everybody. We welcome you to MPH Radio on Saturday, September the 18th, 2021. We speak to you in the spirit of information, education, and liberation by filling in our missing pages of history. Our program today will consist of giving you something to think about. What is freedom? What is freedom? Followed by MPH Black Mini Fact Team with Susie. Followed by a message to the community with Alex Joyner. Next, we will give a tribute to Chief Billy Red Wing Kayak. And the presenter on this particular segment will consist of Penny Williams, John Standback, and Kamal Benjamin. For our next particular segment, we have a new feature that we have added to our program called MPH Community Speaks. And on this first segment, we will introduce to you Sister Eleanor Johnson from Washington, D.C. And our theme today is to be or not to be. Enslavement is the issue. We have a genealogist, historian, educator, writer, Toyo. We are with our sister Latoya Lawson Jones. She will tell a real interesting story on this whole question of enslavement. It's a history that very few people know about, and we are really honored to have it today. And following the discussion and theme, we would just do a closeout on an article of interest dealing with anti-whiteness. So that is our agenda for today, and we will now begin the process of filling in our missing pages of history by giving you something to think about. When we ask you, what is freedom? Well, according to Marx, we will paraphrase his concept of freedom where he once defined freedom as having the ability and means to control those necessities for life. Let me say that again. Freedom is having the ability and means to control those necessities for life. What do you think about that concept, that definition? You know, many of us, millions and millions of people have fought over this concept of freedom and continue to fight over this concept of freedom. How can you use that definition in your life today? So that's our definition for today in terms of giving you something to think about. What we're going to do right now, we're going to make a transition to Susie, and she can share with you for this week, Black Minute, MPH Black Minute Facts. Susie, welcome to MPH Radio.
Good evening. Good evening. Today's missing mini facts come from the PRSP calendar of 2021. And first we'll start on the 12th, where Amilcar Cabrillo was born in 1924. Steve Biko, revolutionary president of BCM, killed by South African police in 1977. And the last mini fact from September the 12th is for the Mae Jemison is the first African woman in the U.S. to go into space in 1992. On the 13th, Geronimo Pratt was born in 1947. Another mini fact, capitalist Governor Rockefeller of New York ordered troops to fire on inmates at Attica Prison. 32 killed in 1971. On the 15th, L.E. Messenger, inventor of machine joining upper part of shoe and sole. Shoe and sole was born in 1852. Racist bomb church in Birmingham, Alabama, killing four little African girls in 1963. On the 16th, Claude A. Barrett, founder of Associated Negro Press, born in 1889. On the 17th, Occupy Wall Street movement began on this day in 2011. And last and final mini fact for September the 12th through the 18th, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, first president of Ghana and foremost revolutionary Pan-Africanist, was born in 1909. There you have the mini facts for September the 12th through the 18th from the PRSP calendar of 2021.
We'd like to thank you, Susie, for your MPH Black Mini Facts. At this time, we're going to take a station break with a message with the music, and when we come back, we will have a statement from the community by Alice Joyner, followed by a tribute to a dear friend of ours, a special individual who had just made a transition, Chief Billy Kaya, an American Indian Movement. We'll be right back. This is Missing Pages of History.
Children's laughter reminds how God is searching for heroes. People need someone to look up to. I never found anyone who fulfilled my needs. A lonely place to be. And so I learned to depend on me.
The greatest love of all is to love yourself, love your people, love your community, and work for the betterment of all mankind. We welcome you back to MPH Radio. At this point in time, we will make our transition to our segment, A Message to the Community. Right now, we're going to bring along Allie Joyner and Brother Joyner. We'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. What is your message to the community for today's program?
Well, Mr. Lee, I would like to welcome all the listeners and callers today to another inspiring show. And I thank these guest speakers today who are going to present their facts and information to us. I would like to thank Susie for that wonderful address, as always. And I'd like to thank you again for honoring my brother, the past show. These uncovered moments of history that we present on the show from different commentators makes a difference in our everyday life as we move forward, because they are treasures that may be soon not taught and forgotten. So we move forward in that belief that, Mr. Lee, you have been doing the right thing for a long time. And I also consider you as one of the good people in this world. And so I myself have thanked a lot of people in my life for the simple, kind words, gifts of all kinds, especially heartfelt sympathy they showed me of the death of a loved one. Good people, I call them. Many are not my friends or family. Most of them I will never know, but they are good people. Educators who teach our children, through this COVID-19 outbreak are good people, doctors and other health professionals who are overwhelmed with the sick and disabled are good people, retail workers and restaurant workers who are braving the unmasked and the unvaccinated public, politicians who are giving you the facts and the science about keeping you safe and alive are good people. Yet many lash out in anger and ridicule at good people who care the most about it. Why is it so hard for some people to do what makes sense and is morally right? Why do the good people have to do all they can to avoid the lies of the foolish and bad people? Many, many years ago, on September the 5th, 1791, one of the good people did what was right by emancipating his slave and was hounded, cursed, and threatened with death, and even his plantation was burned to the ground several times for doing the right thing. He followed his vision of his spiritual creator that all men were created equal and should be free. The fury, this simple act of goodness and rightfulness did not sit well with his friends, family, or neighbors. But it caused some Americans to reassess their own feelings of slavery, and it led to the freedom of all people in bondage in the United States. So I question you, good people, am I free? The deed of gift. Years ago, on the first Sunday, September, I went to Williamsburg, Virginia, to an all-white country church that invited a family I had to commemorate the acknowledgement of the black slaves who had worked on many plantations in the area, Robert E. Lee's Stratford Hall home and James Monroe's and George Washington's birthplace were nearby. As I said and listened to the historic presenter, more than 400 years before my birth, I loved of a good person who did the right thing by God, by country, and by his fellow man. The deed of gift from Robert Carter III. Mr. Carter was one of the wealthiest men in colonial America at that time. The speaker began talking about the Shirley Plantation. This was Virginia's first plantation, founded by Royal Land Grant in 1613. The original indigenous or native people were known as the Connaught tribe, who had lived, hunted, and farmed the land for thousands of years. They were removed by force by the British colonists and soldiers who had taken the lands of the natives as they were not able to fight the British intrusion on their land. Many of the tribe fled and escaped slaughter into Maryland, West Virginia, North Carolina, and southern Pennsylvania. The Shirley Plantation is the oldest family-owned business in North America, dating back to 1638, when Edward Hill the first began farming along the James River near Charles City. John Carter, the eldest son of Robert King Carter, married Elizabeth Hill, Edward's daughter in 1723, becoming one of the largest slave-owning plantations in the area for many years. His records of slave transactions are extremely valuable to any ancestral research of African Americans in Virginia. Also, the plantation was considered a testament to early colonial life, and the history was built with the blood and labor of indigenous wayward settlers, endured slavers, and enslaved people from South America. Thus began from this plantation and the union of marriage, the good man, known as Robert Carter III. Born February 28, 1728, Robert Carter was one of the most successful planters in the northern neck of Virginia. His residence was known as Naomi Hall, a vast plantation of almost 7,000 acres and more than 1,000 slaves were inherited by him. He became noticed among his neighbors as one who treated his slaves humanely. Carter rarely whipped or allowed his slaves to be whipped, let alone scarring them. Carter's many plantations had doubled the rate of the slave population as compared to other populations in the state. Carter's religious inquiry led his conscience to accept that all men were created equal and should be free and that slavery was moral, and he tried to pass this on to his children. Robert Carter III finally did what all great men must do to anchor themselves to the right of the good people of the world. He let his slaves have freedom and provided with them a plan to succeed without failure in the New York world that they would accept it into. For this simple act of doing right, he was ridiculed, threatened, and dispelled from our knowledge that he was the first great emancipator as he freed over 500 slaves. He and his family had to leave his beloved Naomi Hall and move to Baltimore, Maryland. While in Baltimore, he loaned the city money to build the city hall and other investments. He also donated money to the refugees from Santo Domingo who fled the Haitian Revolution. Many whites in America hated the things Carter had done to help the people of color as they showed it often against him. Though citizen Robert Carter, as he preferred to be called, died in his sleep, unexpected, March 10, 1804. His son as executor, George, brought his body back to his most cherished estate home, Naomi Hall, and laid his body in the family garden unmarked. The same day George buried his father, he began buying slaves to replace the ones his father freed over his objection. Virginia and America have looked past this forgotten great and has not given the man his due. So today, please read the deed of gift by a wealthy man who saw his real wealth and how he treated others equally and without prejudice. Our special host today is the most honored guest on the slave legacy left by the many families he freed. Thank you, family.
Thank you, Brother Joyner. And right now, what we're going to do is we're going to transition to a tribute. We would like to do a tribute in honor of William Augustus Tyyack. He was 85 years old, also known as Chief Billy Red Wing Tyyack of Port Tobacco, Maryland. He passed away at his home on Monday, September the 6th, 2021. Brother Chief Billy Tyyack was a good example of what it takes to be a leader and to fight for causes that would advance all of humanity. What we want to do right now, we would like to play this a brief tribute to Brother Tyyack through this particular song that best typifies his life. And then when we come back, we'll have some important guests today who will speak on his life and his work. So right now, this is a tribute in memory of Brother Chief Billy Tyyack.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
That's right. Chief Billy Red Wing Tyyack displayed an excellent example of what it means to get up, stand up, and not only fight for your right, but fight for what is just. This is one of the legacies Brother Tyyack has left the world. We'd like to thank him for it. And at this particular time, we have invited some participants who have had a chance to work with Brother Tyyack, and they can share with us how they will best remember the legacy of Brother Tyyack. And we will start off with Sister Penny Williams. She will introduce herself, and she will share with us some of the legacies that she will most remember by Chief Billy Tyyack. Sister Penny, welcome to Missing Pages History Radio, MPH Radio.
Thank you, Lee. It's an honor to be here today. with you and my brother in the struggle, John Steinbeck, as we remember Chief Billy Red Wing Tyack. My name is Penny Gamble Williams. I'm the spiritual leader of the Chappaquiddick tribe of the Wampanoag Nation. And before I go on, I want to acknowledge the land that I'm on. It's Piscataway land. I give thanks for the land, the rivers and the bay, and for the ancestors who walked this land and embedded their spirit on this land. So to talk about Chief Billy, first of all, that song was so apropos to Chief Billy Red Wing Tyack. He honored all people, and there were this community, the community of the Rastafarian people, were always welcome on Tyack territory. I just wanted to add that. But to describe, in my estimation, Chief Tyack, he was a leader. He was a visionary and a deep thinker. And he was an organizer. And when he had an idea, he was able to lay the plan out, and he would get the right people to work on the plan and make it happen. I mean, I saw that in so many examples of that. You know, my work and just being around Chief Tyack. I met Chief Billy Tyack. First, I met Mark Tyack, his son, in 1978. I was working at the Longest Walk office. And in 1979, that's when I met Chief Billy and his wonderful wife, Shirley Tyack. I learned many things from being around Billy and watching him organize and work and working with other people. And there were so many people who came to Washington, D.C. Tyack territory was the hub. And whenever there were Native people coming from all the different nations to testify up on Capitol Hill, any demonstration, anything that happened, there was always a gathering of like-minded people, strong leaders, activists, who would assemble at Tyack territory. And famous medicine carriers, chiefs, just youth, all kinds of people coming here for that energy that Chief Billy Tyack and so many people, organizers who were here in the D.C. metropolitan area would share with the people who came here. And we were always ready to work. We were always ready to get the work done. That's just an introduction that I want to share. And there was many major things that happened here, many movements. The American Indian Movement, of course, women of all red nations, but some of the activities and some of the major initiatives would always happen here. The ideas would kind of get fueled here, or the people who were fighting for the rights will come here for that energy and that support. And there were many things that happened. One thing is the League of Indigenous Sovereign Nations that got started back in 1991. That was a vision that Chief Billy had, along with another powerful brother, Dr. Jawea. And I can just go on and on. John has a lot to add to this conversation. I want to turn it over to John Steinbeck.
Thank you, Penny. John, introduce yourself and tell your story as relates to the legacy of Chief Billy Red Wing Tyack.
Yeah, so I'm John Steinbeck, and I also live on Piscataway land. You know, I'm an activist. I'm a settler. And I knew Chief Billy the majority of my adult life, not quite as long as Penny, but maybe 1982 or 83. So when we heard the history of this first couple weeks in September, it was mentioned that this is the anniversary of the Attica uprising and the order to open fire on the inmates by Nelson Rockefeller. So I think the place to start is that one of the leaders of the rebellion and the principal victim of the rebellion was a young Mohawk man by the name of John Boncour. We knew him as Dr. Jawea, Splitting the Sky. And he was the only person that was convicted of the death of one of the guards and ended up on death row. And then when the death penalty was taken off the table, he was facing life imprisonment. But he ended up being represented by Ramsey Clark and got released to the custody of Chief Tyack. And that was when I first met Billy, was through Dr. Jawea, through Duncan Murphy and a few others. And we organized in the early 80s around the issue of Big Mountain, which was the largest forced transfer of people in modern U.S. history. 10,000 traditional Dene were driven off their land in order to make way for coal mining. And so that was when I first met Billy. And you know, as Penny said, Billy was a leader. He was a uniter. He brought people together. So I'm just going to talk about a couple of things, so high points. One of the high points was in the late 80s, I want to say late 80s or early 90s, there was a lot of tension, a lot of dissension within the American Indian movement. And Billy was a major leader of the American Indian movement. When we remember Vernon Bellecourt or Russell Means or Carter Camp, well, Billy belongs right up there. He was a major leader. And so when this dissension happened and brothers weren't talking to each other and things were very ugly, Billy organized a conference. He called it Beyond the Powwow, the idea that the powwows were primarily cultural things and not talking about the politics. And so he brought people to the Piscataway Territory and organized the Beyond the Powwow Conference. And that was really earth-shaking, bringing people together. It didn't resolve all the differences. That was not possible. But in terms of moving forward, it was earth-shaking. Just a personal reference to my own life. So it would have been way back in the mid-1980s, I'm sure, probably 85, 86, that Billy talked to me about the importance of being in solidarity with the prisoners in the Iron House. So listeners need to understand, if you are a Native person, you commit a crime on the reservation, you're subject to federal laws, and you end up in the federal system and in the federal penitentiaries. And so you have tremendous numbers of Native, primarily Native men that have been convicted of minor drug offenses. Had they been tried in a state court, they probably wouldn't have even been in jail. But because of the three strikes rules and so on, they face a huge amount of time. And so Billy is the one that introduced me to a man by the name of Art Woolsey, to Barbara Owl, and they were my original mentors. And so to this day, we still continue that work of working within the federal prisons. Mainly we work in Petersburg Prison. These are just some of the examples. Billy was a friend. He was a mentor. He was an example to live your life. I dearly miss him. He can't be replaced. And, I would just, my final word would be, he's gone. We need to step up. need to continue his work. And I really appreciate, Brother Africa, your inviting us on here and letting us talk about Chief Billy.
Thank you, John. And next we'll go to Brother Kamal Benjamin, who will talk about Billy Kayak legacy as it relates to the many movements and its impact that it may have had on the work that he's currently doing. Brother Kamal, introduce yourself and what is the legacy from your perspective as you think about Chief Billy Kayak?
Revolutionary greetings, Lee, and all of your guests for this very important program. When we get to talk about Chief Billy Kayak, I think about him directly and indirectly because, as a member of the All African People's Revolutionary Party, I was with Kwame Ture. And we all know who Kwame Ture was and what he meant for us as Africans and for the Native Americans and the American Indian movement. So we travel a lot together in association with Billy Kayak, another Native American, Wabanini, Jaka Jawir, to many activities. From African Liberation Day, they march with us. Believe it or not, from Malcolm X Park, if any of you know anything about D.C., to the Israeli embassy, to the South African embassy, in protest. And they hailed and celebrated with us on African Liberation Day. These are some great memories we had with them. Also being invited down to enjoy repast and sit with them and talk. We, believe it or not, experienced the sweat lodge. We went down to sit in the sweat lodge, Jaka Jawir and Billy Kayak and a number of others. And we, you know, celebrate and repass and experience the sweat lodge. But their alliance with us, the All African People's Revolutionary Party and the American Indian Movement, were very strong. And Kwame Ture hailed and talked about them and about his experiences, of course. And so we all took part inhaling and working with the American Indian Movement. And my other personal experiences of having some of them stay overnight with me at my house whenever they came into town, especially during African Liberation Day week. So the experiences that we've had have been wholesome in terms of struggling for liberation and freedom of Native Americans and their lands all throughout what we call the New World, to liberate their land. And we support them, and they supported us. And as I said, the experiences have been wholesome, and we understand their struggles are still going on today, along with our struggles as Africans, to free the land and liberate our people. So those experiences, as I said, to be able to talk with a number of brothers from the American Indian Movement, Jaka Jawir, Wabanini, as I said, stayed with me overnight during the LD. They marched with us from Malcolm X Park. I mean, those are the kind of experiences that we've had, and this started back in 1978. When I first came into the All African People's Revolutionary Party, and was being introduced to members of the American Indian Movement, and I can appreciate those experiences that go way back. And of course, we'd like to pay condolences to the brother of Billy Chief Kayak and his family for the times that we had experiences and work together. And we will continue our struggle in working together with them. And as we say, until we all are free and liberated in these, as we call it, the New World. They call it America, but we call it the New World.
Thank you, Brother Kamau. And our last participant for this segment, we will get a mic over to Mr. Anthony Wilms. Mr. Anthony Wilms.
Thank you for having me. And I'm an organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. I've had the honor of hearing Chief Billy Tagg speak on several occasions, primarily at African Liberation Day commemorations organized by us. And what I admire most about Chief Billy Tagg was his relentless and tireless struggle against settler colonialism and all other forms of capitalist exploitation. And he not only, seemed to see the need to organize the indigenous people of the Piscataway Nation, but to work in solidarity with other people that were struggling against common enemies. And, pay homage and honor to the work and continuing struggle of Chief Billy Tagg. And I extend my condolences to his family.
Thank you, Brother Anthony, to all our participants for this segment. And our condolences as well go out to his family, his wife, his son, and all those who supported and loved Chief Billy Red Wing Tagg. What we're going to do right now, we're going to take a pause for the calls. We're going to go into some music with a message. And when we come back, we have created a new feature that we're going to be doing from time to time on MPH Radio. If you have something that you would like to say to the listening world, we will give you an opportunity to express yourself. Remember, this particular radio show is geared towards the powerless and the underserved communities. We would like to hear your stories. We would like to give you an opportunity to express yourself and share your experiences with us. We're going to do that when we come back. You are listening to MPH Radio. That's right. Welcome back to MPH Radio. They got us living on the front line. What kind of man or woman would you be if you could not talk about what you see? Not only what you see, but what you feel. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to continue to fill in our missing page of history. We're going to bring in on that segment, MPH Speak Out, followed by our theme today, to be or not to be. Enslavement is the issue. We'll be bringing our sister LaTanya in shortly, who has a real interesting set of work that she is doing for our community. So this is what's coming up. So right now, what we're going to do is bring in Sister Eleanor Johnson. She's going to do her Speak Out to the World. Sister Eleanor, we'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. What message would you like to deliver to the world today, Sister Eleanor?
Well, good afternoon, Brother Apica, and to all the guests and listeners. My name is Eleanor Johnson, and first I'd like to also offer my condolences to the family and the community of Chief Billy Red Wing Kayak. You have our condolences, and we hope and pray that you continue to move forward in your revolutionary work in the Piscataway community. Today, Brother Apica, I want to talk about the importance of registering to vote. We've seen that across the nation, a reactionary legislation that has been passed to suppress the voters' rights, as well as suppressing women's reproductive rights and many other backwards laws. This is to let the people know that the electorate had some impact on what happened in this country last November 2020, and that today, as we speak on Capitol Hill, there's a demonstration allegedly, there's a demonstration defending the insurgents that attacked the nation's capital on January 6th. So the struggle lives on. So now is our chance to participate. The way we can do that is by registering to vote in all of our communities, by making sure that we find, locate, and support legislative activity in our own micro communities, whether that's running someone for city council, for school board, or as in the District of Columbia, advisory neighborhood commissioner or mayor or any position, but to run for public office and to get out and vote. That is of the utmost importance. The other issue, Brother Apica, is the issue of this pandemic. And Moderna and Pfizer, you know, were financed by the U.S. government to produce a vaccine to help bring an end to this horrible pandemic. And I urge Pfizer and the U.S. government to exercise this authority to make this information that Pfizer and Moderna are alleging are proprietary information, making it available to anyone able to produce the vaccine globally, as long as this pandemic is continuing to take lives as it is now. I understand that in the EU, they expect another 250,000 people to die by December. Across the United States, where people are considering wearing masks and washing hands, a political right rather than a major health concern, people continue to die. Now there are residual deaths because doctors who are not vaccinated cannot perform certain surgeries for people who have compromised autoimmune systems. In addition, in some hospitals where you see an overflow of patients surgeries that are considered priority surgeries or treatments are not being administered because of the impact the Delta variant is having in this United States of America. So in closing, I would urge the World Health Organization, the United States government, to continue to put pressure on Big Pharma, Moderna and Pfizer, to make this information available to all globally to produce the vaccine so that it can be administered. I stand in solidarity with the people of Cuba, the Cuban Revolution. I stand in solidarity with all working class people in the United States and globally. The world should be run by workers, not by this 1%. And I stand in complete objection to the apartheid that the Palestinians live under. And I do not understand what has happened with the African Union, that Israel has observer status, but yet Haiti is not a member of the AU. And clearly the sixth regent of the AU is the diaspora. So we need to rethink, we need to organize, we need to be united and stand together as revolutionaries. And I thank you for this opportunity this afternoon, Brother Africa, and organize, register to vote, stand in unity, and the people will never be defeated. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor, for your speak out. And right now, we're going to continue filling in our missing pages of history by speaking to our theme today, which is to be or not to be, enslavement is the issue. We have with us a very, very special guest, a young lady who's on the front line doing her work to try to help us understand a better understanding of our past, of our struggles, and of our history. She's a genealogist. She's a writer. She's a historian. She wears many hats, and she's good at all of them. And we are very honored and proud to have with us Ms. LaToya Lawson-Jones, who's going to introduce herself, and she's going to tell us about this important work that she is doing for the community and the world as it relates around the history of enslavement of our people. So right now, let's welcome LaToya to MPH Radio. LaToya, welcome to MPH Radio.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I am happy to be here as I am broadcasting directly from Piscataway Land. I honor my ancestors and all those who came before me. I'm just grateful to be here today to share with you all about the Menominee Hall Slave Legacy Project and the work that we're doing. And then we're going to answer whatever questions you might have for me. The Menominee Hall Slave Legacy Project. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Tell your story. The mic is yours. You got all the time you need. Go on.
The Menominee Hall Slave Legacy Project is my baby. I started out with this project when I found out that my family descended from enslaved people who were freed by Robert Carter III. And it took years and years and years searching for records and searching for information when we stumbled upon the freedom papers of my fifth great-grandmother who lived at Menominee Hall. She was a weaver. She dyed wool, and she, and she was integral to the mill that he had at Menominee Hall that allowed them to, he basically was allowed to diversify his holdings. He basically found that his workers were more talented than their white counterparts in the community, and he used that to leverage to find a way for him to be able to free them and they still be able to stay in the state of Virginia. So, I'm sorry. Robert Carter III decided after long deliberation in terms of his religious and moral dealings, he felt that holding people in slavery was wrong, and he decided to do something about it. When his cohort did not do the same, you know, i.e. Thomas Jefferson, who spent his Friday nights at Robert Carter's house, I find it quite interesting that the two of them were so far removed, yet so close, if that makes sense. As we know, Thomas Jefferson never freed any of his enslaved people while he was alive, while his friend made the conscious choice to free 511 people and their subsequent offspring. The reality that Robert Carter was able to do this in a vacuum, he was able to set forth a legal document that could not be undone by anyone, his children, any of his successors. And he was able to make sure that those people had any and everything that they needed. It's so remarkable, this story that has been buried for hundreds of years is so remarkable. And he made efforts to make sure that they were cared for and they had every possible thing they could possibly want or need. He rented them land, at times evicting his former white tenants to make sure that those who he freed had everything that they needed to be successful and to remain free. I find that finding your family on the deed of gift is one of the most remarkable gifts that history has for us who happen to be descendants. It is amazing to see your ancestors' names written on a legal document that has withstood the test of time. They still exist. They still can go to the courthouse and still can see the document that changed our ancestors' lives. I descend from the Newman, Thompson, and Taylor families that were freed by the deed of gift. And I've been searching ever since seeing my ancestors listed. I've been searching for other descendants who may or may not know that they are a product of this main mission. So our work is to find ways to find our present-day descendants. Hopefully the work that we're doing to build the bridge in terms of the genealogy work will basically have started moving from the past to the future. So we're looking for records and people. We know all of the information about the enslaved, but we're moving forward to find them on the census, to find their family members, to find their children. And the hope is that the work that we're doing allows someone who is searching backwards to be able to make that connection. So we're working diligently to get all of the documents that we have available uploaded to the internet on Family Search and as well as Ancestry.com. And the beauty of all of this is that when we find descendant families, it is amazing to see how close-knit this community was and how the things that they passed down to their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren are all things, those are things that all of the families who were freed have in common. And I find that to be very, very rewarding that we're able to see, okay, this is something my great-grandmother told my grandmother. And as we move along, we see that those things intertwine. This community is so amazing. And I found that we have people who were freed by the deed of gift who went on to fight in the Civil War. We had people who went on to be pillars in their community, founding of churches, one of which the Cub Run Baptist Church in near Manassas. But it is one of the few churches that is still standing that was founded by formerly enslaved people. My wonderful colleague, Crystal Gaskins, who happens to be a descendant, is currently looking to repair and rebuild the Cub Run Baptist Church. I think it's in Centerville, Virginia. But we've worked so diligently to find other, descendants of the enslaved. But there are so many people who do not know that their ancestors were a part of this main mission. So we'll continue to do our work as we try to connect the past to the future and be able to share with people who may not have known that their ancestors were connected to this main mission.
You know, Latoya, in terms of this particular incident, this particular phenomenon, what were some of the things that you learned that you didn't know before that may have been considered a little bit different from the norm, from the norm when we talk about this enslavement process? Was there any particular thing that stood out the most in terms of this
really
narrative versus the historical narratives that we hear about? Yes, go ahead.
Absolutely. What is amazing to me is that Robert Carter III was able to find a legal loophole that allowed him to free all of these people. His counterparts did not like that at all. They were not fans of his plans to free his enslaved people. And they went through great measures to try to get it overturned. His children, his son George was just ridiculous in terms of the effort that he went forth to try to get it to be overturned. What I find remarkable about this manumission and about the fact that it has been buried for so long that there has been nothing virtually written about Robert Carter III or the Deed of Gift. There's literally two single books in all of history. There's two books written about Robert Carter III, and the one of them is about his business enterprise, and the other is about the deed of gift and how he came to this understanding that black people didn't or shouldn't be enslaved. The other thing that I found very remarkable in this story is that Robert Carter III owned his own brother. His father had a child with an enslaved person, and Robert Carter III looked back at the situation and could see just how harsh and cruel slavery was, and to know that his own brother, who he says looked more like his father than he did, could wake up every morning and be able to look out and know that you hold your own brother in slavery. He chose to free. His brother was among the very first that were freed. Robert Carter's Deed of Gift created what was called a gradual emancipation plan. So in August of 1791, Robert Carter III started out to write the Deed of Gift. And it's remarkable that it's even called the Deed of Gift because freeing someone from slavery is indeed a gift that can't really be repaid. And so what I found interesting was that this plan, he owned over 16 plantations. Robert Carter III owned about 30,000 acres in Virginia and parts of what is now West Virginia.
And so imagine, you know, you are an enslaved person on one of his 16 plantations. He comes around to do the census to figure out who all are related. He took the effort to do like a census of all of his plantations. He had people give him who they wanted to be when they were free. He allowed them to select their own name. So where most enslaved people carry the name of their slave owner, Robert Carter III allowed for every enslaved person to decide what they wanted to, what name they wanted to use to start their new life. He made sure that they were they had skills that would be marketable to the community. Because shortly after Robert Carter III wrote the deed of gift, the Virginia State Legislature decided to make some changes to laws that made it more difficult for people to emancipate enslaved people, things that made it more difficult for people who were freed to remain in the state of Virginia. So they basically changed the law that if you were an enslaved person and you were manumitted, that you had to have something that made you valuable to the community, or else you would have to leave the state within 1 year. So you had families who were freed by this deed. You may have had the mother who was freed, you know, in 1792, and the son's on the list to be freed in 1801. If the family has to be separated, if the mother has to leave the state, they can't keep their families intact. And Robert Carter III specifically wrote out this deed of gift to make sure that all of those families stayed intact. So those who were not connected to a family, prior to him writing out the deed of gift, he gave his children their inheritance. So dowager slaves who were passed on when he married his wife had to be given to his children as a part of their inheritance. The enslaved people who he inherited from his father and grandfather were, he was allowed to put them on the deed of gift to be freed. So his father and grandfather both died in the same year, allowing Robert Carter III, a three-year-old child, to own 1,500 people. And there's so many more interesting and remarkable things about this manumission and about the man who freed them. There's tons of information on our website, nomineehallslavelegacy.com, where you can go and read the history about the Carter family. You can read a history about the manumission. You can see the names listed of all those who were freed. And we're in the process now of adding all of the freedom papers for those who we have been able to locate. We're adding their freedom papers to our website so that families who, you know, might be Googling their family member's name or are able to then have an instant connection to finding their freedom papers. That's really what my project is all about, is helping other people who are connected to this manumission be able to have the same experience as I had looking at the deed of gift, seeing your ancestors' names listed with ink that looks like it rises off the paper. It's a remarkable experience, and I want it for everyone who happens to be a descendant of this manumission.
Tell us just a little, before I open up the lines, there are some people who may have some questions about your story and the research that you have done so far. But before I open up the lines, can you just answer this one question for me? What was Brother Robert III, what was his, Robert Carter III, what was his family background? Where did he get all his wealth from outside of having enslaved no Africans? What other means that allowed him to be so wealthy to allow him to be able to acquire so many human beings?
Rob Carter III was the grandson of Robert King Carter, who was the land baron for Lord Fairfax in Virginia. So Robert Carter, well, he will be Robert Carter I. This is Robert King Carter, as they call him. You know, they've named King's Highway after him in Virginia. He was literally the richest person in America. He owned over 300,000 acres of land and owned over 5,000 slaves. Robert Carter III, his grandson, inherited from both Robert King Carter as well as Robert Carter II. They both died in the same year. So Robert Carter III lost his father in January, and then in August he lost his grandfather. And his portion of the inheritance left him with 30,000 acres of land and 1,500 enslaved people. And he was 3 years old when he received this. His uncles cared for his estate until he reached the age of majority. His mother had sent him away to learn in England, but she did not want him around his slave-owning uncles. And so he was brought up in a different way. He wasn't brought up in the way of the Southern planters. And he basically was, he inherited all of it. Every single thing that he had, he inherited from his grandfather and father.
Okay, let's open up our lines. We can go to Alex. We can come to you, Alex. What questions or comments you'd like to have to address our caller today as we continue to talk about this narrative of enslavement? Alex.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Lee, for inviting and having Ms. Jones today. Mrs. Jones, I got your name just like it said, you know, in doing my research of my own family out of Virginia. Because I found out, you know, my parents were near, well, my mother was near Augusta, Virginia, Gladys, Virginia, Farmville, Virginia, and all. And so reaching further back, I went all the way out to the northern neck of Virginia with the Palmers and with the Paines. And so that's why, you know, your name was given to me, and I could not believe it. And I thank you for that wonderful conversation, you know, that we had. And I still hope that you will help me with my research.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Yes.
That's what our project is all about.
Yes, and put that fire in my heart that, you know, I finally found, you know, them. As we've seen in that movie, if we can all remember how Alex Haley felt in Roots. So, you know, waiting for that aha moment, you know, I found you, you know. So that's what it's all about. Because we find our ancestors in this lost history. We barely know who we are. We have taken the surname of the masters who were before us. So we're Jones, we're Harris's, we're Williams, we're Robertson's, we're whatever that we were given, or in this case, to Mr. Carter, we chose those names for a profession or whatever. But still, to be able to trace ourselves as far back as we can go to wherever our great-great-great-grandparents were first brought here, the first plantations they served on, their first masters or whatever, and to know that we have fought from that bondage all the way to colleges and universities and doctors and law professors and anything that we can be. We have succeeded in their dream, what we could become. But the fight is not over, and we need to continue on. But we cannot bypass this past history and move forward. But we need to stand on what they gave us from their heart and their trust that their children would grow up to be the best that they are. So I thank you for doing all the research that you're doing, all the help that you've given out to the community, because that's what it means, I think, what Mr. Carter was talking about and what you said, that when he saw his own brother, being a half-brother, but still his own brother, in slavery. And he knew it was not right, because that is not family, and that is not the family of man. Not to be in bondage and in servitude to another, to be beaten and whipped and chained and hung and lynched for almost no reason at all. So we've come a long way. We got a long way to go. But again, I appreciate everything that you're doing. And like I say, our conversation will go on, you know, beyond this show very much. So I look forward to talking to you. And I want to turn the phone over to, you know, anyone else that's going to call in and contribute, because this moment is for our listeners to inquire now about any information that they can get from you. So, Mr. Lee, I'm going to give it back to you so you can open the lines up.
All right. Thank you, Brother Alex. We'll go to Brother Anthony. Brother Anthony, any comments or observations you'd like to share with our special guest today, Ms. Jones?
Sure. Ms. Jones, thank you for your presentation. It was very informative. My question to you is, based upon your research, was Mr. Carter unique, or were there other slave-owning Europeans that also, freed their, emancipated their slaves, either while they were alive or at their death, to your knowledge? Or was this kind of like a rare occurrence?
So there were laws in existence in Virginia that allowed for people to manumit upon their death in their will. And then there was also the capability for them to free people by deed, which is what Robert Carter III did. There were probably a good handful of people who did do a similar thing to Robert Carter III, but Robert Carter III's manumission was unique in the fact that it is, to this day, the largest manumission of enslaved people by a private individual in American history. There have not been any other manumissions that can pale in comparison to the size of the manumission that Robert Carter had. The second largest manumission was of 22 people. And so by sheer volume, Robert Carter III definitely is an anomaly in terms of the vast amount of people who he freed by this deed of gift.
All right. Thank you, Carla. Let's go to Kamal. Kamal, any comments, question you'd like to help our guest, Ms. Jones? Kamal.
Yes, my brother.
Yes, any comment, question you'd like to raise with our guest as relates to her research on finding her heritage and just the story of this large freedom of enslaved Africans by this wealthy slave owner? Anything you'd like to say?
With the subject of slavery, I think that covers all of Africans throughout the new world and on the continent. And I thought she gave a vivid picture of the consequences and the sights that, you know, her relatives and all were enslaved on. And I feel that we all can relate to that in some way. You know, our struggle goes back a long ways. And when one talks about their experiences, I'm sure all of us have some experiences that we have talked with our parents and our relatives and our friends. And if we're in organizations, we organize around it. It rally gives us a means of rallying coming together, forming alliances, like with the American Indian Movement, et cetera. You know, our history is very illustrious and a struggle. It goes way back. And it will continue, you know. We will do our part to organize and educate our people and free the land.
All right. Thank you, Kamal. In response to that statement, Ms. Jones?
I want to share the text of Robert Carter III's Introduction to His Leadership, because it is so remarkable. He talks about all of his reasons for deciding to free his enslaved people. And he says, "I, Robert Carter of Nominee Hall, in the county of Westmoreland in the Commonwealth of Virginia, am possessed as my absolute property many Negroes and mulatto slaves whose number, names, situations, and ages will fully appear by schedule here to annex. And whereas I have for some time been past convinced that to retain them in slavery is contrary to the true principles of religion and justice, and that therefore it was my duty to manumit that, if it could be accomplished without infringing the laws of my country and without the disadvantage to my neighbors and the community at large. Whereas the General Assembly for the Commonwealth of Virginia did, in the year 1782, enact a law entitled An Act to Authorize the Manumission of Slaves. Now, be it remembered that said Robert do so at the under the said act of myself and my heirs and executors, administrators, emancipate from slavery all such my slaves emancipated in the schedule below, in a manner and form hereafter particularly mentioned, set forth, that is to say, that for as much as I have with great care and attention endeavored to discover that mode of manumission from slavery which can be effected consonant to law, with the least possible disadvantage to my fellow citizens, I am determined to discharge myself from this act of justice by duly declaring that my slaves not receive an immediate but a gradual emancipation in the following manner. 15 of my slaves under the age of 46, beginning at the oldest and descending according to their ages, are hereby emancipated and set free on the second day of January 1792. 15 more of my slaves shall be freed on the subsequent year until 1801, which means 150 of my slaves with the age restricted by the act will be manumitted. Regard still being had in all the subsequent manumissions that the oldest of my slaves be the first emancipated, whereas it will be found from the schedule that a large number of my male and female slaves are at present under the ages of 21 and 18 years. I do declare that such, and every of the males shall be set free when they have reached the age of 21, and every one of the females when she has attained the age of 18 years respectively. In witness thereof, adhere my seal this first day of August, 1791.
Okay, let's go to our next caller. Caller 7236. I believe maybe you said Eleanor, but caller 7236. Your question or comment?
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Jones, for this wonderful presentation. Today you reminded me of someone I want to wish a happy birthday to. Her name is Janet Victoria Carter, and she's born the 14th of September. You've made me wonder. I know the Carter family of Orange, Virginia, and I have often wondered about their heritage, whether it was first American or were they enslaved people or who they are. Are you familiar with the Carters of Orange, Virginia?
I am not. One of the things that is remarkable about this emancipation is that none of the people who were freed by this deed of gift actually took the name of Carter. Everyone chose a different name.
Was Harrington one name that you hear?
No. There is actually, though, a list of all of the names on my website. I could not possibly go through all of them, but the surnames are listed. Allen, Arnold, Bacon, Bailey, Banks, Brooke, Brown, Brutus, Burke, Carey, Colson, Conway, Cooper, Kraft, Daly, Daniel, Dial, Ditcher, Dixon, Gaskins, Glasscock, Greggs, Gumby, Hackney, Halbert, Harris. There were lots of Harris's votes. Harrison, Henry, Holiday, Holmes, Hubbard, Johnson, Jones, Johnson.
Okay.
There's
Maybe
quite a
stop
few.
You right.
If you'd like, if you'd like the full list.
I would love to be one of your volunteers and love to work with you. I'd love to find out about those Carters of Orange, Virginia. They were farmers. They farmed black Angus cows, and they grew everything they ate with limited exception, including the thing they grew the crops for the cows to consume as well.
Wow. Well, I'd love to connect with you if you would like. My contact information is available on my website, nominehallslavelegacy.com.
You're saying nominee?
Nominee, N-O-M-I-N-I, Hall, H-A-L-L, slavelegacy.com. And you can email me or...
I am sorry, I have limited dexterity.
Carla,
what we
would do for anybody who would like to get in touch with Ms. Jones or have any questions, can you please just email us? The email address for this radio station is mphradio@yahoo.com. Email us mphradio@yahoo.com. And we will get back in touch with her where she can communicate with you. Just send us your information, your contact information. Okay? We thank you. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to take two more callers. And then Ms. Jones will actually give us your final thoughts on this particular, on your particular work. Right now, let's see if caller 4298. Caller 4298. Any questions, comments from Ms. Jones?
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And greetings to Ms. Jones. It was very interesting presentation, and I appreciate it. I really don't have any per se. I know that during slavery, you know, the slave owners expected their workers to work for free, and which is the essence of slavery, and that that, you know, they could talk to the slaves any old kind of way, deal with them any old kind of way they wanted to, and always expected them to come to work. And I just think, you know, that we are glad that there was a compassion and empathy and in one of the slave owners who actually freed his slaves. I mean, unlike Thomas Jefferson, who was supposedly a lover of slaves and or something, he never emancipated slaves. So, you know, it's an interesting system. You know, it's liberalism is quite interesting. I don't know. I don't really have anything to say right now. I thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you,
Carla, for your comments. Ms. Jones, I'm going to ask you this last question, then give us your final
thoughts on the work that you're doing and how can the public support your work and your project. My final question to you is, have you gone further back enough in terms of not so much looking at who the slave owners were, but also when you're looking at enslaved people, originally, where did they come from? Who were their family in terms of African people? Because we have a tendency sometimes when we're doing our research, we only stop at the point of view of finding out who enslaved us. But that can't completely make us whole until we find out truly in terms of who we are as a people based upon our original development. That is to say, go all the way back home to Africa. And where did your family originate from there? So are you, or have you found any additional information in terms of your family ancestors as relates to their original origin in Africa?
I've had the luxury of doing DNA, but I also have resources from Robert Carter himself, where he talks about, Robert King Carter, his grandfather, talks about how he had ships go to specific regions, the Bight of Biafra, as well as literally the entire west coast of Africa. My specific makeup or my DNA is from Nigeria, Benin, and Mali. And so I've had the luxury of meeting people from the same tribe that my ancestors were from. I've received ancestral naming rights, and they've given me my tribal name. So this whole process has been really remarkable in terms of, like, knowing. I know where my sixth great grandmother was the very first person brought to this country. And it's amazing to me to see on actual handwritten documents by this family who were so shrewd business people. But they were very, very, very specific about the kind of people that they wanted to enslave. They were specific in terms of they built ships to go to West Africa to take people from specific places. And it's remarkable that, one, those records exist at all, because so few records exist in terms of enslaved people or in terms of people who were manumitted. There were people who purposefully burned down places where those records were housed. And so for me, being able to see in their handwriting that they say, oh, that they were going to Senegal, or that they were going to Mali, or that they had specific need for blacksmiths from Benin. Like, those are things that these people actually wrote in their diaries about. And, you know, the fact that those things exist, and I can go to Duke University Library and actually look at the book where this man wrote about where they went to get our ancestors from. Like, that's real. And that's the other part of why I'm doing this work, because I want other people who are connected to this manumission to be able to have the same experience that I have in terms of being able to see the deed of gift, being able to actually go and touch and see and be able to see, you know, the books that talk about our ancestors. There's, you know, they had a tutor who lived on the property to school Robert Carter III's children. And he has an entire diary where he talks about life on that plantation. His name was Philip Scythian. And he talks about the day-to-day activities on the plantation. He talks about the enslaved people. He actually was hired by an enslaved person to write down his genealogy all the way back to Africa, and that's from the Gumby family. They have an actual document that Scythian wrote, taking down word for word what this enslaved person has said about their ancestry and their people in Africa. And so it's a remarkable experience for me to be able to help other people have the same experience that I had. And that's really why I'm doing this work, because I feel that it's important. It's important for everyone to be able to know where they come from.
You know, Ms. Jones, you know there's an ongoing movement around this whole question of enslavement and reparations. I'm just curious, listening to your story, if you may know anything about who inherited the wealth of Mr. Carter once he made a transition, and what kind of businesses were they able to create as a result of the historical legacy of inheriting wealth from one generation to another?
Well, his children inherited everything, and the act of him freeing all of his enslaved people made him richer than he ever was. it's amazing. He made him richer than he was prior, because instead of having enslaved people as a liability, you know, having to pay for their care, having to pay for clothing and food and such, you know, he no longer had that requirement anymore. Those enslaved people had to care for their own selves. He rented them land, so he was receiving financial recompense for renting his lands to them. So this was not just his religious or moral leaning towards freeing enslaved people. He saw this as a way to reduce his liability and increase his profitability. And so some people think that his decision was specifically done for financial reasons, and then there are others who say that it was specifically for religious reasons. I think that it was both. And I think that in terms of reparations, I think that they are due to the descendants of enslaved people, and that our country has to come to some kind of reconciliation for slavery, Jim Crow, redlining. The list goes on. You know, I think our country has to address this issue, or we'll be faced to you know, history repeats itself. When you don't take heed or take the lesson you're supposed to learn from something, it continues to repeat. It continues to repeat. And I know that the current news cycle is something that makes us think about that, but it definitely is something that needs to be addressed. I think our country needs to Truth and Reconciliation Commission in the way that South Africa did for apartheid.
All right, at this point in time, we are listening to MPH Radio. We're going to take a quick pause for the calls, and when we come back, we're going to ask Ms. Jones to give her final thought on the theme tonight, to be or not to be. Enslavement is the issue, and we have some final closing comments from some of our members. We'll be right back. This is the voice of MPH Radio.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society.
Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say. And how long have you had your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
we'll make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right?
That's right. If there were no day or night, which one would you prefer to be right? We welcome you back to MPH Radio as we discuss the theme today, to be or not to be. Enslavement is the issue. We're discussing this subject matter with Ms. LaToya Lawson-Jones. She's a genealogist. She's a historian. She's a writer. She's an educator. She'll be doing some research on the family. She ran across this particular history dealing with enslavement of our people, and she is shining with us. She is helping us to fill in those missing pages. So, Sister Jones, what we're going to do right now in our closing, we just would like to give you a few minutes for your final remarks about the work that you are doing, why it's significant, and how we can support you. The mic is yours, Ms. Jones.
Well, I appreciate you having me on your show to share about the nominee hall man you mentioned. I appreciate being able to come and share with you all in hopes that maybe somewhere down the line, someone who is listening may be connected to this man you mentioned and may be able to gain key information about their family. It's important to me, this work, because these are my people. You know, we have so many instances where these families were so intertwined, and I come from three families that were a part of the BSDS. And I'm sure that as we continue to research, we'll find more and more ways that this community was intertwined and interconnected and supporting each other to remain free. So I appreciate you having me, and you guys can support me by sharing my website or sharing the story about this NAU mission, about the largest NAU mission in American history, 72 years prior to the Emancipation Proclamation. I appreciate being able to use your platform to reach more people, and I look forward to working with anyone who might be interested in this area of research. We're looking specifically for people who have experience in working with the Library of Virginia and their system of the way that they catalog the records. So if there's anyone who might be interested in assisting us with some of our research, you can always shoot me an email. My email address is directly on our website, nominehallfreelegacy.com. And thank you so much for having me.
And we thank you, Ms. Jones, for helping us to continue to fill in those missing pages of history. We thank you and you and your work. Right now, we'll go to our supporters and contributors and members of MPH. We'd like each one of them to give their final thoughts or comments on today's program. We'll bring Sister Susie back. And Sister Susie, any comments or thoughts you have as relates to today's program? Susie.
Okay, first of all, MPH would like to make care and love of those around the family of Chief Billy Tyack comfort and peace to get them through the days ahead. MPH sends their most sincere condolences. And also I'd like to thank the guest who was very informative as far as the genealogies, because occasionally we have questions, and basically a lot of times you can't find the resources to really answer the questions. And I'd like to thank Ms. LaTanya Lawson-Jones for providing a lot of information. At least now, the listening audience, we have a resource that we can turn to when we have questions regarding the genealogy of our people. I'd like to thank everyone.
Thank you, Susie. And next we'll go to my co-host, my brother, Alex Joyner. Your final thoughts in reference to today's program. Alex.
All right. Well, thank you again. The first thing, Mr. Lee, again, I would like to offer my condolences to Chief William Billy Redwick Tyack. And I'd like to say to the family, it began with the chanting, the shouting, and the lifting of the spirit of death to the great longhouse in the sky above the ground. The women wept, the children became still as rocks, and the brave of the young and old fell to their knees and bowed their heads in honor. Their leader, a great and honest man, lay with his eyes closed before them. His measure of life was 85 sons of the new year of hunting and harvest. He had danced the native footsteps behind his mother and father since birth. Now, today's footsteps would be for him, as the laying of the headdress bonnet was placed by his side, a great rainbow opened in the sky above. Then the wailing women and children began to say their final farewell to a most beloved husband, father, and grandfather who loved his family well. Soon, they were drowned out by the boasting shouts of the men of the tribe of all his good deeds. The pounding of their footsteps seemed to quake Mother Earth itself. Then there were the final shouts and cries from all the people of the tribe, rejoicing and praying to the Great Spirit to make their beloved one on his last journey home. If you have a good heart, you could feel the Great Spirit come down from the clouds and take in his arms our chief upon a white steed into the sky above. A life of goodness and honor he left us to follow in his footsteps to dance forever. The spirit of the last Sundance. We honor you, Chief Tyack. Now,
thank you, brother.
The second thing I would like to mention is for the honored guest today, I appreciate everything you said, because we move towards our recovery of information. And as I mentioned earlier, the movie Roots, because it was one of the most watched shows ever. And not only is it about tracing our history, but also knowing the stories of the ones that lived before, because those stories are just as important as the dates and times of arrival as in birth and death. So there's a story between all of us and how we live and what we do and what we learn and what we contribute and how we had family with each other. So I thank you again, our honored guest, because as Susie said, now we have that roadmap. We have someone that we can count on to help us if we need it. And thank you again, Slee.
Okay, and on that note, you'll listen to MPH Radio, which is a community project of missing pages of history. We at this present time have many activities on hold because of the nature of this coronavirus and the conditions that people are functioning under. But in the meantime, we are open to supporters and membership to come help us build this institution, Missing Pages History Radio. And if you have interest, we please ask you to email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. The mphradio at yahoo.com. The radio program come on biweekly. Every other Saturday, you can listen to us and we can come to your homes at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And at the same time, we are looking for authors, writers. We are looking for people who are doing things in the community, particularly the underserved communities, to come and tell their story and to help us fill in those missing pages. We know today we hope to have contribute in the spirit of information, education, and liberation. And we'd like to thank all those who were participants, from Miss Latoya Lawson-Jones to Penny Williams to John Steinbeck to Kamal Benjamin to Anthony Williams and many other participants. We'd like to thank y'all for this particular program today. And of course, and not least, we want to remind everyone that please give our condolences to the family of Chief Billy Red Wing Tire. He was a true soldier. He was a good example of how you can serve humanity, and his legacy will live forever. He has now entered into our missing page of history. He will never be missing at all. So until next time, 2 weeks from now, we tell you, spread the word, come and join us, and if you want to support the radio station, you can do so by making your contribution to MPH Radio and care of Missing Pages of History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. We also like to hear your views and your comments of this show and other shows, and you can go to our archive and view some of our past programs by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/missing-pages-of-history-inc. So until next time, let's continue to go forward, backwards never, and work on completing our missing pages of history. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Until then, when we can complete our missing pages of history book, it will serve as a tool to unravel all of this ball of confusion in this world. We thank you. This has been Missing Pages of History Radio.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Nobody knows.
we are here.